Yeah, KFFR Community Radio delivering the goods for you on this Wednesday morning. Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, Cosmic Debris. Kind of reminds me of the Mind Eraser tea that we enjoyed last night, Stacy, talking about some of the mumbo jumbo. But when Stacy and I were down in Mexico, we purchased some mind erasing tea, which is just from leaves in a, God, what kind of tree is that? Do you remember?
The Ramon tree. Called Te de Ramon.
Te de Ramon. And it's leaves from this tree. Of course, they put it in a bag and crush it up. They can charge a lot of money for it. But it's got like tryptophan in it. And it turns you into a nighttime zombie. It's the best sleep aid I've used in a long time. What did you think last night?
I slept great.
Yeah, great. Okay, you're listening to the CoronaCast on KFFR. I am Steve Skinner with Stacy Stein. We're being joined on the phone right now. One of my favorite people here in the Valley, Kirk Klenke. He is the president of the Colorado River Headwaters chapter of Trout Unlimited. He's an outdoor enthusiast, and he knows a few things about bugs and whatnot. So we're going to talk to him this morning. Good morning, Kirk. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Steve. I'm good. I'm hanging out, isolated, up in the Ranch Creek Valley, watching nature out my windows.
Yes. You were just telling me a moment ago about your new mantra. Why don't you share that with our listeners?
Oh, I love it. It's touch nature every day.
Okay. Have you been outside yet?
Yes. I went for a mountain bike ride yesterday.
Oh.
Left from my house, came back to my house. I'm being pretty cautious. But fishing a couple times. I live right on Ranch Creek. That's good for your soul. Just anything out in nature is good for your soul. Mostly I've been outdoors getting projects done.
Good for you.
Another way, but nature.
And how's your family doing? Everybody's good?
Yes. I don't get to see my granddaughter. My heart's broken because she's growing fast. She's a little over a year. But I get pictures and videos. And this thing, too, will pass.
Awesome. I want to do a little nuts and bolts with you, especially with your perspective from Trout Unlimited. I'd got a listener of KFFR sent me a question this morning to ask you. Figure anything goes, so I'm going to ask you this question, and you can share some information. There's so much fly fishing, so much interest in fly fishing, so many fishermen. There are you know, guide services and all that stuff. Big part of our community, big part of the headwaters of the Colorado. So this is a pertinent question, I think. My man Manny Goldberg asks, the majority of Western states allow public use of rivers that flow through private property to some degree. Rafters can float and fishermen can wade in rivers that flow through private land so long as they enter from public property. They can even leave the river and walk up to the high water mark. Every stream in Colorado on private land is closed to wade fishing without the aforementioned permission. Why does Trout Unlimited support privatizing the rivers?
Okay, first of all, I have to do a clarification. Trout Unlimited is a conservation organization. Our mission statement is conserve, protect, and restore the cold water fishery. Whether it's flowing through private land or public land really is immaterial when you're just trying to heal the river. So we really don't take a stance on access. That's up to state governments, and that's political, and we're science-based. So did I dodge that as successfully as Donald Trump would have?
Even better. Well, you know, it is what it is. That's what you do, and if that's your mission, you don't take a stand on access, then that's the answer I was looking for.
Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about this watershed that we're in, the Upper Colorado, and Fraser River in particular. You see a lot of those stickers around that say, save the Fraser River. What does that mean?
It means I smile every time I see one.
Yeah.
Yes, it's to raise awareness that the Fraser River is endangered. Grand County is the most impacted county in the state of Colorado by the Transbasin diversion, with over 300,000 acre-feet of water diverted out of our rivers each year. Pitkin County second, with 90,000 acre-feet diverted out of the Roaring Fork and the Frying Pan. So three times more than any other county. That leaves only 40% of the native flows. A river needs water, and what's harming our rivers is a lack of water. We have 40% of the native flows spread out wide and shallow in the native stream bed so that velocity slows down, the river is unable to move sediment, and it's now built like a solar collector. So it can heat up to temperatures that are lethal to trout. Those are the kind of things that we're trying to find solutions for, and we are doing stream channeling projects that will match the stream with the volume of water we're getting. So we leave the native stream bed for the spring flushing flows, but we create an inner stream bed that the river can recede into and be healthy with lower flows. These are the kind of compromises we have to make because water law, written by miners in the 1850s, didn't take the environment into consideration, and these are legal property rights that we have to work with.
So is that really what's to blame for the Fraser being so depleted? I'm just trying to go back to when the decisions were made with Denver Water and the other organizations that diverted 60% of our river up here. Did anybody anticipate that it was going to destroy the environment?
No, I didn't think they saw that one coming. Water law, written in the 1850s when Colorado was a territory, had some serious environmental flaws. The worst being, you can appropriate 100% of a river for the beneficial use of man. That means no water can be left in a stream. And we see that here in our county, where some streams are dried up 100%. That's hard on the aquatic habitat.
Let's talk a little bit about riparian habitat. I believe, I'm not sure you can correct me if I'm wrong on the statistics, but I believe that 90% of the bugs and beasts in our world depend on this very small percentage of land, which is the riparian habitat, which is the land along the edges of rivers and streams.
Yes, I'd like to throw this statistic out.
Let's hear it.
3% of the landmass in Colorado, 3% of the landmass is riparian, yet 90% of the bird and animal species rely on these plants.
So if
they're really important plants, as does the river. You can't have a healthy river without a healthy riparian zone.
Right. So let's talk about what we've got now. We've got this depleted river. I walk along the Fraser River, try to get my fingers touching the bugs and beasts every day. There's a lot of green slime in the river as high up as Winter Park. I haven't gone above there, but along the Fraser River Trail in Winter Park, there is a lot of green slime, and that's usually associated with fertilizer, farm runoff, golf courses, warm water. What do you attribute the green slime to here? I know that it impacts the bugs and terrestrials and extraterrestrials you'll find in the river.
Yeah, it certainly does. And here's my life experience. Back when I was still a teenager, I had an old-timer come up and sit down next to me right at the river during the Fraser picnic, back when they had one. This old-timer was just his first thing out of his mouth was, you know, there never used to be that green slime in our river. So I attribute the green slime to two major components. One would be sediment, which is a great medium for growing weeds and algae, and then the other is temperature. And we have a combination of both now because our rivers have lost their velocity. They're not flushing themselves clean. And every time we build something new, we're disturbing the earth and allowing migration of soils to get into the river. Our streets, stormwater gets directly into our river. And that increases the amount of sediment, and yet our rivers that are depleted have even less velocity to move that sediment. So some of the problem is caused by people on this side of the divide, and some of it's caused by people on the other side of the divide.
Talking to Kirk Klinke, president of the Colorado River Headwaters chapter of Trout Unlimited. Kirk, you mentioned the Roaring Fork River Valley, and I'm from that watershed, and I've seen that watershed be depleted and polluted and overused and underappreciated. When I moved here a couple of years ago, I thought, man, that is the exact same thing I'm seeing here. You see these really big development, condo developments, second home developments, lots and lots and lots and lots of development. And it seems like we are on a a path to develop till we develop every last drop, to grow until growth is no longer an option. What do you think about growth for growth's sake?
Not sustainable. While we're on growth, I want to go back to riparian. Back in the 70s, from Highway 40 to the Fraser River, right where the Lions Club fishing ponds are now,
yeah,
that was all willows. So riparian can be 300, 500 feet away from the river. You still have a healthy riparian zone growing. Our setbacks allowed in our town and county is 30 feet. So essentially what we're doing is diminishing the riparian by 90% by allowing development that close to the river. So, yeah, development is a double-edged sword. It's an economy, but it's not a sustainable economy. So that's my opinion.
Yeah.
I think you can have a sustainable environment without growth, but that's a pretty controversial opinion I just threw out.
It is indeed. Let's talk about some of the good things that we find in our riparian habitat, especially up here, very high up in the high country. We're at the headwaters. I'm sure there's different kinds of beasts and bugs as you go down, but what are some of the exciting beasts and bugs that people might not know about that are a part of our ecosystem up high?
Well, it's interesting what percentage of bugs start their life in the river and how sensitive they are to forms of pollution. So I think our most interesting bug is called the pteranarsis. It's a giant stonefly. It used to be prolific in the Colorado River, and then they put in Windy Door in 1984. It disappeared 100%. And that's why one of the big projects Trout Unlimited's working on is to take the Colorado River around the reservoir so that Northern can keep their reservoir and their pumps going and take their share of water rights, but we can reconnect the Colorado River and get the healthy bug life from just above the reservoir down below the reservoir, and in turn allow the fish to move in their natural pattern up and down the river. Reconnecting a river without taking down a dam is one of the most exciting things that could happen to the bugs in that section of the river.
Kirk Klecky, are you saying that the pteranarsis would return above the dam or below the dam?
It would return below the dam because it exists above the dam. Not in great numbers, and it used to exist in great numbers below the dam, but we can bring that back. It's been slowly getting smothered because the dam is shallow, it heats up, and it collects sediment that spills over the top of it. So for about the first 7 miles of river below the dam, it's so sedimented in that the bugs can't live. The bugs live in the voids between the rocks. And when these spaces get filled with sediment, it's just like Pompeii when Mount Vesuvius erupted. That's the end of life. And so far, 38% of the macroinvertebrate species have disappeared in that section of the river.
What other macroinvertebrates do we have in our upper Colorado River Basin?
We have a lot of small stoneflies and a lot of caddis. If you're fly fishing and you use something with a little flash of green, that's kind of a caddis nymph color. That's usually pretty successful if you're nymphing. Those are the two most common that I find. Mayflies. We really have a semi-healthy population. Here's something interesting, though. We did a mile of stream channeling to make the river healthier during low flows, and the highest macroinvertebrate count on the Fraser River now is just below the project we did, because those bugs are growing up and being healthy and floating downstream, and that's where we find our strongest counts.
And have we started those hatches yet?
We have some hatches, but mostly small midges. If you're out fishing, you're still using little tiny flies.
Are you using nothing? I got to ask you this, Kirk. Are you using terrestrials, and what are terrestrials?
Oh, terrestrials would be ants. I would use ants right now. Grasshoppers, not till August. They're bugs almost like perennial plants. Mm-hmm. You see them come every year, but always at about the same time.
And let me ask you this. When you do fish with terrestrials, do you, in case you get your hook caught on something like a stick fish or something, do you bring extraterrestrials?
A whole box of them, yeah. I catch a lot of stick fish.
Let's talk about the fish. What kind of fish we got in our streams here?
Okay. Native is the cutthroat. You have to go now above Denver Water Board diversions to find cutthroat because the introduced species have pretty much wiped them out, outcompeted them. Mostly the brook trout have been the toughest on them. But one thing Denver Water did for us, they put those diversion structures in to take our water. They also became fish barriers so the brook trout can't get above them. So we have smaller cutthroats, but we have whole colonies of them all over in the high country and in the high altitudes that brookies can't get into. Again, Denver Water Board diversion structures. Every once in a while, they do something really good for the environment. And then the introduced species would be brook trout, I mentioned. Rainbow trout actually started in the Northwest, and through some freaks of nature, were able to get over the divide where big ice fields had changed courses of rivers and allowed a few of them to get over. They became the cutback trout, the cutthroat trout, the greenback cutthroat trout. So rainbow trout are native to Washington and Oregon, but they moved here millions of years ago and they evolved to be our cutthroat trout. At least our greenbacks, our original cutthroat trout. So we have a lot of cutthroat trout that are introduced. The Yellowstone from that river, from all over, we have introduced new species of cutthroat trout. We've introduced rainbow trout. We brought in brown trout from Europe. And then we've got brook trout.
And, of course, there's the great bird life. I've seen geese and ducks and dippers and whatnots. My favorite bird is the ouzel or the American dipper, and it is an indicator species of healthy riparian habitat. I've seen a few of those around. What's your favorite bird, Kirk?
Right in there with you, Steve. I smile every time I see a dipper. It's an indicator that you have a healthy environment, is one. And two, they're just cool birds. They just sit there and bob. I love them. Another bird I love, I have a stock pond for teaching beginners and letting neighborhood kids fish. And every once in a while, I'll see a bald eagle swoop down and take one of those fish. One of the best things I've seen in nature.
Yeah, I've seen them actually dive into the river in the Roaring Fork and pull out a fish. And that was pretty exciting. Kirk, we don't have much time, but I wanted to ask you, there's some signage along the Fraser River Trail that explains some of the wildlife, and there's a sign about the boreal toad. How do I get to see one of those? And what do they sound like? Can you make a sound like a boreal toad?
I've never even seen a boreal toad. They're pretty endangered, and you can find them in certain high altitude areas. Greg Horseman could tell you right where to go to see a boreal toad. He'd be an interesting conversation alone just on boreal toads. He's a scientist that lives here locally.
We'll definitely look him up. Well, Kirk, I really appreciate you spending some time with us this morning. Kirk Klanke is the president of the Colorado River Headwaters chapter of Trout Unlimited. Anything else you'd like to add this morning, Kirk?
No, I just want to thank you for letting me talk about nature, my favorite subject.
You're definitely coming back. I could talk to you quite a bit about nature, and we're not done here. So thanks for joining me, Kirk, and I hope you guys have a great day.
Yes, you too.
All right.
Keep playing the good music. It's helping through this COVID thing.
Thanks. The next tune I'm going to play is definitely for you. It's Taj Mahal and playing his classic song, Fish and Blues. It was recorded on my radio show at KDNK in Carbondale on the 15th of August, 2013. You want to hear that?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go turn my radio on right after I hang up.
All right. Have a great one, Kirk. You take care.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Bye. That was Kirk Klanke, president of the Colorado River Headwaters Chapter of Trout Unlimited, right here on KFFR.